The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week we talked about mindfulness, and I thought I'd continue that topic a little bit today. I guess I'll start again with a kind of a definition of mindfulness, since there are some of you who weren't here last week. So mindfulness, I guess there's some different aspects to mindfulness, and some of the key pieces are, first of all, awareness of knowing what's happening. And it's important in the mindfulness aspect to know what's happening while it's happening. Many of us, I think, have the experience or have a familiarity with an experience where we kind of come back into knowing being in the moment, and yet we do know what has been happening to us for the last little while, the last few minutes. So that we could kind of think about that as being an awareness. That awareness without the mindfulness is the kind of awareness that happens all the time. There is an awareness that is functioning. Our minds are put together to be aware of what's going on. There's this knowing capacity, this consciousness capacity of the mind. There's an ability of the mind to recognize things and to feel things. And all of those are happening all the time. We don't have to be mindful for this conscious processing to be happening. And then when mindfulness returns, mindfulness is basically this reflective capacity, the capacity to know what all these other processes are doing, to be aware that those processes are happening. So I like to think about mindfulness as being a reflector. It's reflecting what's happening. Kind of like a mirror reflects. The mindfulness is a capacity of the mind that can know what experiences in the moment, can be aware of the processes in the mind. They can be aware of the processes of the body and the processes in the mind. It can be aware of the thinking, it can be aware of feeling, it can be aware of the way that we perceive things and recognize things. And in being that reflective capacity of the mind, essentially all mindfulness really does is reflect. It doesn't decide anything, it doesn't like anything or not like anything, it just reflects. It just is aware of whatever is happening for us. Brings that kind of an awareness of awareness, in a way, that we are aware of all of these other conscious processes that are going on in our minds. And because mindfulness is just this reflective capacity, it is kind of inherently non-judgmental. I used this analogy last week, but I'll use it again. The reflective capacity of a mirror, if we think about the quality of a mirror that reflects, that quality of reflecting is not changed by what it reflects. So the mirror doesn't, the reflective quality of the mirror doesn't change as it's reflecting either something beautiful or something disfigured. It simply reflects. Now, there are times when it feels like the mirror doesn't reflect very well, for instance, if it's covered with steam or something like that. But we know that the mirror is actually reflecting everything, all the steam on the mirror. It's just it's not functioning in the way that we would normally think of it functioning as a mirror. And similarly with mindfulness, mindfulness just reflects. It doesn't, it's not impacted. The capacity of the mind to reflect experience is not impacted by what it is reflecting. It just keeps on reflecting. That's its job. That's the job of mindfulness, is to just keep on reflecting. And since it is not impacted, that quality of mindfulness is not impacted by what it reflects, it has an inherently kind of neutral quality to it. It brings along with it this kind of neutral capacity of just knowing, of just experiencing without reactivity. So the mindfulness has these pieces to it, that it is awareness of what's happening while it's happening, and it incorporates this non-judgmental knowing, non-judgmental reflective quality. Now, there are definitely times when we are mindful of our experience, and we are mindful of something that is difficult for us. We're mindful of anger, for instance, and it feels like we know that there's anger happening, and yet at the same time it feels like we don't like the anger. So it doesn't feel particularly non-judgmental. So what's happening there is essentially that, you know, technically, if we want to go into the kind of Buddhist psychology of what's happening in the mind there, is that the moments of mindfulness, of knowing the anger, are kind of rapidly interwoven with reacting to the anger. At least in the Buddhist psychology, a moment of mindfulness is non-reactive. But moments in Buddhist psychology are really, really fast. So for instance, they say there's something like, you know, 17 trillion mind moments in the blink of an eye. So the interweaving of mindfulness with other states of mind can happen very rapidly. So it can feel like, in our experience, it can feel like we are being mindful and reactive at the same time. And it's kind of like the proportion of moments of mindfulness. As those get stronger, as there are more moments of mindfulness than moments of reactivity, what seems to happen is a kind of a shift in our experience. That we, for instance, in having something come up and then reacting to it, we can then recognize that reactivity with mindfulness also. And if the mindfulness becomes strong enough, by strong it means not so much that there's like we're pumping it up or making it more strong in a moment. It's more that there, it's more moments of mindfulness. In a moment we're either mindful or not mindful. And so this cultivation of the quality, the capacity for mindfulness is kind of about seeing if we can keep bringing that quality of mindfulness over and over, moment after moment after moment. That begins to strengthen the quality of mindfulness by strengthening or making it happen in more and more of those mind moments. And as the mindfulness gets stronger, as there are more moments of mindfulness, there seems to be a shift that happens in our experience. That whatever is happening is seen as just being a process that's happening. It is seen as just being reflected. So in every moment of the mindfulness, there's the knowing what's happening in the moment. So there's that reflecting. And then there's what's being reflected. And often in our mindfulness, in our mindfulness practice, we begin our mindfulness practice by getting familiar with what is reflected. We get familiar with our bodies, we get familiar with the states of mind that we habitually go through. We get familiar with all the processes that go on. So we get familiar with what is being reflected. And as the mindfulness gets stronger, we can begin to actually recognize more the reflecting part. We can get familiar with the reflecting, which brings us to some of the qualities of mindfulness. We start getting familiar with some of the qualities of mindfulness, which includes this non-judgmental, non-reactive capacity, that it is just this reflector. It's fairly neutral, just reflecting. And so as mindfulness gets stronger, we can kind of more land in or recognize the mindfulness itself. And with that comes along the recognition of some of these qualities, this non-judgmental capacity. And so as the mindfulness gets stronger, in this example of something happening and then reacting to it, so it's like we're looking through this lens of reactivity. It's as if there's a shift that happens, that we're no longer looking through that lens of reactivity, but we take off that lens of reactivity and begin looking at it. And we are more balanced around. The mindfulness is much more in that space of or we are more aware, let's say more aware of the non-reactive nature of the mindfulness itself. And that movement or that practice, as the mindfulness gets stronger, what it feels like is that we are able to just watch these processes happening. We're able to just see anger arising and aversion to anger arising, and there's no longer any problem around them. It's just a process that's arising in the mind. It's just something that's happening that's being reflected. So as mindfulness gets stronger, we get more familiar with this place of just reflecting. That there's just this capacity of the mind to reflect, to know. This shift generally brings some sense of release and relaxation around the struggles that we've been having. Often with that, you know, something's happening and we're reacting to it, there's a feeling of struggle, there's a feeling of dissatisfaction, a feeling of unease, a feeling of unhappiness, a feeling of stress or suffering. As the mindfulness gets stronger and can simply reflect that struggle, the struggle is simply something that's happening, and it's no longer a problem. It becomes process rather than content, in a way. The struggle becomes just something that's going on, as opposed to being caught by the content of what's happening. We begin to just recognize this is just something happening. It's just a natural process in the mind. It's like, well, this is an interesting tree that's growing here. This is an interesting phenomenon that's coming up. And so as mindfulness strengthens, that feeling of ease around whatever is happening gets stronger. And the more we practice, the easier it is to move into that place of ease around struggle. So that, if, for instance, now in my own practice, when I feel any kind of struggle coming up, there's any kind of suffering or unease that's happening, it's like it becomes a mindfulness bell. It reminds me, oh, mindfulness, be mindful. And in that movement to mindfulness, that shift happens. And then there's no longer struggle. There's just this observing. Now, it may not be pleasant, but it's no longer a problem. It's no longer something we're fighting with. So this shift to observing experience from this reflective place, from this non-judgmental place, brings along with it a lot of different feelings. There can be many different feelings. There can be the feeling of ease, of happiness, even of joy, even in the midst of seeing something very painful. It can feel a little odd the first few times it happens. It's like, you know, you're sitting there watching your mind go through this contortion, and in the watching, it's like, wow, this is so great that I'm seeing this. So there can be a kind of a joy that happens in this moving towards this place of non-reactivity. There can be an affection, a feeling of kindness that happens. It's just like we've gained a little bit of wisdom and understanding about the processes in our mind, and we see, you know, these are processes that have a long history. And, you know, it's kind of like seeing a child go through some kind of struggle or temper tantrum, you know, that you know is not really harming them. It's just their struggle. There can be a kind of affection and kindness and compassion towards that child going through that struggle. It's similar in a way with the mindfulness, that it brings that capacity of kindness to our hearts. Kindness for whatever is happening. Compassion for whatever is happening brings that quality of metta, of loving kindness. And it brings the quality of equanimity, balance of mind. By its very nature, being non-reactive, it moves us in that direction of balance. When we can connect with the experience of the reflecting. Now, this can take some time to get familiar with this. Something I mentioned last week but didn't go into too much is beginning to recognize mindfulness. Getting familiar with the feeling of being mindful. The feeling of presence, the feeling of being awake in a moment. Really helpful to get a felt sense in a way. There's a felt sense in the mind and the body, primarily in the mind, around being mindful. Now, often, though, as I said, there's the reflection, there's the mirror and the thing reflected. And often in our mindfulness practice, we begin, and the instructions are very much beginning, as I said before, by looking at the thing that is reflected, by knowing that we are seeing the thing that is reflected, getting familiar with the qualities of the thing that is reflected. So getting familiar with the qualities of the body, the vibration, pulsing, tingling, pressure. Getting familiar with feeling, with pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Getting familiar with the states of mind, whether the mind is colored by anger or wanting or dullness and sleepiness or restlessness and agitation, or whether it's concentrated and at ease. Getting familiar with all of these things, getting familiar with the ways in which all of the processes in our mind interact. Those things that I've just mentioned are basically the things that the Buddha suggests that we attend to in our mindfulness practice, the body, feelings, mind states, and what are called dhammas or experiences or mind objects, various translations of that last one. So the Buddha recommends that we do pay attention to what is reflected as a way of getting familiar with being in the present moment and watching what happens in the present moment. It's very important to get familiar with the processes that happen in the present moment. And it's also very helpful to get familiar with what it feels like to be mindful. For me, this was not obvious. The being mindful of experience was pretty clear, but what it felt like to be mindful, that was not as clear to me. And one time, one teacher, Joseph Goldstein, suggested, well, get familiar with the difference between what it feels like when the mind is wandering and not present, and what it feels like when the mind is present. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd. How can you get familiar with what it feels like when the mind is not here? But I began exploring. It kind of became a koan for me to explore that. And what I realized was that in that moment of remembering, the moment when you come back into mindfulness after having been lost, because of that capacity of the mind for kind of knowing, because those processes of knowing and perceiving and recognizing and feeling are happening all the time, that when mindfulness comes back, there is a recollection. There can be a recollection of what it felt like a few moments before. So in that moment of remembering, that moment when we come back into mindfulness, we can get a sense of the contrast of what it was like a few moments before or the few minutes before and what it's like now. What does it feel like as the mind comes back into mindfulness? And for me, that exploration was what really began to help me to get a sense of this feeling of being aware. This exploration around the moment of remembering. What we usually do with that moment of remembering is to judge ourselves for not having been mindful. So we actually, in some ways, obliterate the ability of our minds to recognize this distinction by judging ourselves, by beating ourselves up for not being mindful. So I'd like to propose that you try exploring this moment from the point of view of this is a great moment to begin to get familiar with what mindfulness feels like. See if that supports a letting go of the judgment, which it did for me. I mean, I got really interested in that moment of waking up. And it that interest itself helped to helped me to let go of the judging around the fact that I had been wandering. It didn't matter as much anymore. It's like every time I woke up, it was an opportunity to begin to get familiar again with this feeling of mindfulness, this feeling of being present. It could happen 100 times in a sitting, and I'd have 100 opportunities to get familiar with that. So exploring that moment. Now, at times, it feels like there's kind of a lag in effect. You know, we come back, some part of our mind recognizes that we've been lost in thought, And again, it's kind of those interwoven moments of being mindful and being pulled back into our thinking. Maybe a moment or two of mindfulness and then we're back in our thinking. And a moment or two of mindfulness and we're back in our thinking. And so it can feel like we're kind of coming out of the mud. It doesn't really feel like a pure, clear arising of light in this very moment of waking up. Just keep exploring. Just keep playing with it. On one retreat, I just kept asking myself, what's the earliest I can be, know that I have been, become aware? What's the earliest I can recognize that? So an exploration of that moment of remembering can be really helpful in helping us recognize this quality of mindfulness, this quality of mindfulness itself. One of the reasons why it's so helpful to recognize mindfulness is because, as I mentioned last week, it actually happens to us. Moments of mindfulness happen to us a lot throughout the day. Moments of knowing what's happening while it's happening happen in split seconds throughout the day. We couldn't really live our lives, we couldn't get through our day without from time to time knowing what's happening while it's happening. If we were just completely lost in our world of thought, we would not be able to drive very well. Although it is quite amazing how well we can do things while we are completely lost in thought. And again, it's that kind of those processes of the mind going on that function, that kind of take care of us. But there are these moments that happen actually pretty regularly through the day. These moments of just a moment of just that light coming on. But what we normally do with that moment is to, oh, I've just realized this thing. I've just realized that there's a spot on the carpet. And then we take some action with it. So we don't typically recognize mindfulness has come back. We recognize the spot and I need to do something about it. So we jump onto the thing that we have become aware of and start thinking about it, planning about it. What do I need to do about it? Do I need to get it? Do I need to get rid of it? So we just leap off onto that and then we're lost again. We're just acting out of habits and patterns again. So what I'm proposing is that the more familiar you get with the feeling of mindfulness, with the feeling of being aware, the more you will start to recognize those moments when they happen. You're walking across the street and suddenly you're awake and walking across the street. It doesn't change anything, actually. It's pretty light. It begins to point our way, another place, another beautiful thing about this moment of waking up is it begins to point to just how effortless mindfulness can be. Because in that moment of mindfulness returning, it didn't take any effort. You didn't have to try to do it. It just happened. So if you can become aware of that moment and recognize what it feels like, you will get more and more of those effortless moments of mindfulness through your day, in your daily life even. And that begins to pull the thread of mindfulness. It can begin to pull the thread of mindfulness through our day just by taking an interest in what does it feel like to be mindful. So right now, can you have a sense of what it feels like to be aware, be present during this talk? I hope you've been kind of exploring that, checking into that a little bit. It's actually quite a familiar feeling when we get to know it. And yet it is an extraordinary experience when we can ride it and be in that experience of just knowing the mindfulness, being aware of awareness, essentially. It's quite an extraordinary experience, but it's incredibly ordinary. It's so ordinary that it's like the air we breathe. We don't really recognize it. It takes a little bit of exploration to begin to recognize, oh, this is the water I'm swimming in. This is the air I'm breathing. So, what are your thoughts? What are your, anything you have to, any questions or comments or... Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions about how to talk out of mindfulness?
How to talk out of mindfulness. So I'm going to ask you to ask that question again and try to be...
I did talk out of mindfulness.
You did, great.
But I had a specific question, but you know, sometimes conversations go on and on and on and I get stuck in mindfulness.
Yeah, you get caught into the content.
No, I get stuck in mindfulness and I don't know what to say.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay, so you get...
stuck in the observation.
In the observation as opposed to being able to connect with the back and forth exchange.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what you might explore is... letting go a little bit. I mean, there's kind of two sides to this equation. Sometimes people tend to get in a conversation, will get just easily pulled into the conversation. And, you know, I'll talk about ways to work with that in a moment. On your side, you're kind of getting stuck in the turning towards and not able to so much connect with the content of what's going on. So there's one thing that, one way of paying attention, and this is, it's so important for our daily life to learn how to pay attention to content. My teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, talks about having a 50-50 mindfulness. 50% of the attention on what is happening, on the content of what's going on, and 50% of the attention on what's happening internally. So 50% outside, 50% inside, kind of. So that we actually learn how to be mindful of content as well. That's the real struggle that we have. That it's we train in our sitting practice to let go of content. Over and over again, we let go of our thoughts, we let go of all the stories, we just keep letting go. And so in our sitting practice, we don't get to learn too well how to be mindful of content. And so this is the work of our daily life practice. So the way for me, and what you may try experimenting with, is see if you can let go of the mindfulness to engage with the content, and then see if you can bring just a little bit of mindfulness back in around the... And not to go into detail. I mean, the daily life mindfulness with paying attention to content has to be a pretty light thing. That's the other thing. In our meditation practice, we're cultivating a kind of a mindfulness with concentration, you know, a kind of a penetrating into exploration of, you know, what's happening in a more detailed kind of way. In our daily lives, this mindfulness needs to come to be a more light touch, that it's just kind of aware of the gestalt of things and not so much moving into detail. So no, connect with the content. See if you can, in fact, I'd encourage you to see if you could practice spontaneity a little bit. Let go so much of the mindfulness piece. And in the practicing spontaneity, see if you can then just in a light way check into, can I be aware of this conversation? Can I know that I'm speaking while I'm speaking? Just take it at that level, and not necessarily needing to go any more penetrating than that, not needing to be investigating emotions or thoughts or body sensations. Just know that you're speaking while you're speaking. That for me was kind of the first step, to kind of let go of the idea of trying to do the mindfulness and just kind of, okay, I'm going to talk and see if I can connect with knowing I'm talking while I'm talking. That's it. Just that simple. And then once I got to that place, I began bringing in kind of the inner world a little bit more. Can I know whether I'm at ease or tense while I'm speaking about this particular thing? And that said, you know, when we are mindful, it does tend to slow us down. And we become more thoughtful, we become more reflective. And I can imagine there would be some conversations where whatever is going on, you know, if it's a group conversation particularly, if it's a group conversation, it's kind of like, well, okay, they're talking about something that isn't particularly interesting to me. So do I really need to engage in that conversation? So exploring that side of it too a little bit, you know, finding ways to engage that are meaningful to you. Does any of this speak to... And so the other side of it, of getting caught, you know, the instructions are kind of similar in a way. If you notice that you end up caught a lot in speaking, see if you can... You might start by picking some times or practicing. Practicing mindful speaking actually is a great exercise. Find somebody who... also does this practice. Helpful to do this with somebody else who is doing this. And then see if, you know, have lunch and see if you can support each other in a mindful conversation. So practice it. Set it up as a practice opportunity with a partner and begin to engage in practicing it. So that's a great support if you tend to really get caught a lot in the content. Find some times and some ways to actually practice. Find someone to practice with. And then again, seeing if you can just, from a very simple level, you know you're moving into a conversation. You know, before a meeting, for example, if you use a calendar reminder for meetings, see if you can allow that calendar reminder, you know, maybe include a little note in that calendar reminder that says, be mindful, to help you remember that intention for being mindful for certain interactions. Seeing if you can carry that intention into the meeting. And then, again, just in a very light way, start by just, can I know I'm speaking while I'm speaking? See if you can engage, like in a work conversation, stealth mindfulness, you know, so that the other person who may not have a clue what's going on with you, that they don't need to know you're practicing mindfulness. See if you can just be mindful in such a way that it doesn't impact how you engage. But can you know that you're speaking while you're speaking? Just start there. Start with that piece. And that was very helpful for me to start there, rather than trying to do the more detailed. There is a way that we can kind of be aware of much more while we're speaking. We can be aware of the thoughts that are bubbling up as we're preparing to speak. We can be aware of tension and tightness in our body. We can be aware of ease or relaxation. So there's a way to open it up and to be more connected while speaking. But for me, it was a slow process. It's like I couldn't go there to begin with. I had to start simply. So starting with just knowing I was speaking while I was speaking. And then I found myself getting caught into conversations where I got agitated, and this was on a retreat, actually, where we were allowed to speak. And I found it hard to get out of a conversation. I wanted to get out of a conversation and couldn't figure out how to do it. And then I reported this all to my teacher, and he said, well, you got agitated, so track agitation when you're speaking. Just that piece. So that's another, and the next good piece to bring in. Once you can be aware of speaking while speaking, see if you can track whether you're getting agitated. That often may mean something needs to shift in how you're engaging, in what you're saying, in how you're behaving, or perhaps it may indicate time to stop, time to gently close down this conversation. I think that's enough for now on that.
So what you're just saying, the same would apply to when you're sitting with yourself. So like this morning I found myself, it was difficult for me to be mindful continuously or for a good period of time. I was steamy. And when I did become mindful, I felt really relieved and like I'm letting go of that stuff in my mind, uh-huh. which I realized was agitating, and I was trying to control things. So knowing that, I tried to be more mindful. But I did have something I wanted to say about... So what you just described about being in conversation, that could be applied to being in with yourself.
In inner dialogue.
Inner dialogue, yes. When you're sitting.
Yes.
It's really similar. A lot
yeah,
of the
tracking
stuff makes sense.
The fact that thinking is happening while you're thinking. So that could be a place to begin. And then again, it's really helpful if thinking is happening to check in. Is this creating agitation? You know, checking into that side of things. In sitting, we do have the opportunity to let go of content, you know, because we're not in active conversation. So we can let it go. But it also can be, we do also in our daily lives need to learn how to think mindfully. And one of the explorations around thinking, which just immediately pops into my mind around this, one of the explorations around it is beginning to learn what thoughts are useful and what thoughts are not useful. The Buddha actually talked about this in one of his teachings. He said, well, you know, when I was meditating before I became fully enlightened, I began to realize, well, there's two kinds of thoughts. There's thoughts that are not helpful, and there's thoughts that are helpful. And so those thoughts that are not helpful, those ones that spin us into agitation and worry and greed and delusion, those thoughts that just take us away, those are ones that it's helpful to see, can we let those go? Can we release those? Thoughts that are helpful include thoughts that turn us towards practice. There are, of course, also things that we need to perhaps do in our daily lives. We need to, helpful thoughts can include planning our morning so that we can get to work on time with a spacious time driving and don't need to feel rushed. So, you know, those are helpful thoughts to kind of shepherd us through our lives in a way where we can not be as reactive. So learning, beginning to distinguish what thoughts are helpful, what thoughts are not helpful. So many of our thoughts are not helpful. It's amazing. So many of our thoughts are not helpful. But then one more piece before you say the next thing. The other piece that the Buddha commented, when meditating, so just when meditating, not so much in daily life, but when meditating, he came to the realization, okay, some thoughts are wholesome. You know, thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion, thoughts of goodwill. He said, I could think these thoughts for a day and a night, for multiple days and nights, and nobody would come to harm from this. I would not come to harm. Other people would not come to harm. There is nothing wrong with these thoughts. And yet, the mind can't settle deeply while thinking these thoughts. And so while they are not harmful, perhaps this meditation is not the time for even these beautiful thoughts. So.
Healthy, you said healthy and non-healthy. I was thinking, I mean, I don't want to label them bad habits and better habits, but with being mindful all the time, and I can't do that, but I learn more when I'm not mindful much of the time, because when there's a jump over from being mindful to non-mindful and back to mindfulness, I realize what it's like to be mindful and the feelings I get in the changeover.
Yes.
And that really motivates me to try to be mindful.
Yes.
Because it puts me much more at ease.
That's exactly what I was pointing to. Yeah, that moment of remembering, there is that shift that happens, you know, that the mind becomes at ease, it's more open, it's more spacious, it's less reactive. There's all kinds of beautiful benefits of that shift over, as you call it. So yeah, and those are supportive. Recognizing those qualities in that shift over really motivates us to cultivate that more. And we do learn too, in that shift over time, you know, we learn too about the habits that have been in play in that time, and we get to see the impact of those. The mind also learns from that. It learns from seeing the impact of how the habits have played out. It begins to recognize more directly what kinds of habits are helpful and what kinds of habits are not. Thank you. Sophia, behind you.
Thanks, Andrea. I'm really enjoying this talk today. And I had a question about hearing, because I was at a concert, and I think I sometimes forget, for a variety of reasons, I need to be mindful and guard the sense doors at all times. And there's times when I don't want to, and, you know, it's at your own risk every time you do that. But I find that it's, you know, same thing. Like, well, how do you listen? And so, like, you're supposed to, like, keep noting. I mean, it seems to me that would wreck it. You know, it's like, well, hearing. I notice I'm hearing this instrument. You know, it's like, this is pleasant. I'm hearing it. It's like, you know, I don't really want to do that. You know, and I want to get lost in that. And I want to be completely absorbed in it. And that's what I did. And it went into my body. And that was fine with me, because that was safe. That was safe music, and I allowed it to go in, you know. And it filled my body, and I was, like, mindful of it, and I was aware I was moving my body around, the energy from the music. And then I was also talking to somebody who was reminding me of who I was in the past, and that was very distracting, and I got lost in that, and it was distracting other people, and that's a separate issue. But then I'm thinking, well, you know, talking, that was kind of, you know, it's like when you're listening, you should listen. If you're going to be talking, mindful to then do that. Don't do, you know. There's simultaneous things that were going on, because I was, like, looking at the person that was performing, and then I was disturbed by their appearance, and I was judging it. And there was something that was going on with that. It was really strange. But I don't know. I guess you can be mindful of all that. You can say, well, hearing, judging, reacting. Just note it. I'm reacting to the you know, reacting.
You can use the noting in that way. That can be difficult in daily life to continually use that noting. So again, you know, the one thing that happens with mindfulness practice is that we get familiar in our sitting meditation with a certain way that it feels and certain techniques that we connect with. And, you know, in sitting meditation, using the noting practice can get us to be very clear and very precise and very continuous, and it feels good. You know, we really move into that place of the non-reactivity. And so we think that that's what we need to do in our daily lives. And the approach in our daily lives, at least in my experience, it kind of has to come in from another side. It needs to come in more from the gestalt of knowing. And not so much the specific, oh, I'm seeing now, oh, I'm judging, oh, I'm hearing, oh, I'm thinking, oh, I'm feeling, oh, you know, it's like, that's harder to stay connected with the whole experience. And so this is where, again, this familiarity with the feeling of awareness can help, to just a sense of presence and connecting with presence, and then allowing the whole gestalt of the experience to be there with that presence. So that, and another way might be to just, again, track, am I present and am I at ease or tense? You know, as a kind of a doorway into this other way that mindfulness can feel. I mean, when we're practicing and sitting, we get familiar with specific ways it feels to pay attention. And there's many different ways that it feels to be aware. So we need to kind of expand our horizons in our daily life and find ways to stay present and yet engaged. So the kind of very broad light touch is what I usually encourage people with daily life practice. Not really to hold on too much to the mindfulness, but to just keep returning and recognizing those moments as they remember in a very light way. And, you know, if you want to try to stay connected with that feeling of presence, to see if you can do it in a way that allows kind of the whole picture in and track whether there's suffering happening or not. So we've got a couple more minutes if there's any other. Yeah, Mary.
Thank you. I've received a lot of pleasure and peace from mindfulness. What I learned today from you was I have two or three things that I'm always aware of that is not skillful. One of them is getting things done quickly. And I still value that. And it's difficult for me to, and I love it now that you mentioned it slows you down, mindfulness slows you down, so that's a gift to me. But I still value at a high level the getting things done quickly. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm very verbal, as you probably noticed. And mindfulness helps me sort of decide, do I really need to say this?
Yes.
And that's another gift.
Uh-huh.
And the third thing is control and fixing. And sometimes trying to help people is a type of I'm recognizing control is in it. So these are three things that mindfulness is healing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, to even notice that, because this awareness just came up today, that's a gift, and I'm just full of gratitude.
Thank you. One piece I'll just mention, that there are times when we do need to get things done quickly, and we can also be mindful of that. I mean, what tends to happen is that as we are mindful more, we do realize, again, it's skillful, unskillful. When is it skillful to move quickly, and when is it adding something that doesn't need to be added? So I just wanted to put that out there, that mindfulness does tend to slow us down. It tends to open us up to the appreciation for more spaciousness in our lives. But we can also be mindful when we're moving quickly. So they don't have to be separate. So thank you.